to see so many young devotees . I was a student in a university in Rhode Island called Brown University, and I was studying physical chemistry. I was a science student, and I was on a full scholarship. But I was wondering what was really the purpose of life. I saw that the professors didn't seem like they really believed in what they were teaching. It just that was their job, they were teaching it. But if you ask any kind of existential question, they said, don't ask all those questions. I'm just a science teacher, I'm a math teacher, I'm a physics teacher. Don't ask anything spiritual, or it's not my subject. But they also didn't seem to really be very much inspired by what they were teaching. Then one day there was a professor came from Harvard, because we were in the same league, and then so they would have some sharing of professors, and I forget what the title of his lecture was, but I went there. And then he was actually talking about more existential things, and he told the story about Siddhartha, who became Buddha, and how he went out from his palace and saw a sick person and an old person and a dead person, a dead body, and then a baby. That he became, Siddhartha became, you know, shocked that we go through these changes, we take rebirth again, and what's the whole point? It's like an insult and then injury. I want to find out what was the purpose of life. Then he went into meditation. So being an American student, science student, I never had been exposed even to the idea of reincarnation. It wasn't in the movies, and now it's in the movies and stuff a little bit, but in those days it wasn't a public issue in the West. Probably different from any of you who have been, at least in your childhood, exposed. It was a big shock, and I was wondering, well, if we could go through all these changes, and I would ask my teachers, I think that's when they told me, don't bother us with all this stuff, we don't know about this. So then that kept hounding me, that there may be some higher purpose to life. And then during the vacation, I went to San Francisco, and I went into a bookstore to buy some book about something that would answer my questions. I saw all the books were from India. And I asked the bookstore owner, why all the books from India, nothing from America? Is it from America? Spiritual things? No, that's India. They said, well, I got one book. It's an astral projection. You go into some kind of meditation and you project in your dream body, your astral body, your psychic body. So I bought the book and I was trying it, but I wasn't having too much success. A little bit sometimes, I thought. I was trying to project out and fly around a little bit. So I thought that, well, I saw that the author was in San Francisco, so I went to see him. And then I rang on the doorbell, no answer. I heard some noise inside, so I went to the back. There he was cooking up something, big hefty guy. Then I said, I read your book, I wanted to ask you a few questions. So okay, come in. So he took me in his living room. I said, I want to tell you one thing first. You see, since I wrote the book, I've been grounded. I've not been able to project. So then I thought, well, so I don't think there's much use of me advising you because, you know, now I'm grounded. And after that I thought, you know, better I check out all these people that write these books. So I got some book on yoga, I was trying to do some yoga, then I checked out, went to his ashram, he had a big swimming pool, all the girls were on there in bikinis. You go and hug them all, and then I didn't think, he doesn't seem so spiritual. Like that, then I tried the Buddhism for a while, Tibetan Buddhism, and read the book, but I couldn't find a Tibetan Buddhist guru to check out. But then I thought, you know, this is like kind of trying out things by trial and error. Better I find someone who's a real guru and get some someone who's gone through all these things and already come to some realization. So I thought maybe that I wouldn't find anybody in San Francisco, so I thought let me go, maybe go to India. Then I saw an advertisement for the Rath Yatra in San Francisco in 1968. Said they get a vegetarian meal for a 25-cent donation. So I was a vegetarian. I thought, okay, at least I'll go and get the vegetarian meal and then check it out, see what the people are like. In those days, ISKCON was in a very basic kind of condition. I went in, everybody was sitting in the kitchen around the pots and serving themselves and eating. I was just sitting there, nobody was serving me or no one was... So then I thought, maybe this is like some spiritual thing, the survival of the fittest. You just go in the pot and... Then I wanted to give the 25 cents, but they were really spiritual. Nobody was willing to take it from me. They said, "Don't go somewhere else." So then I went next door to the bookshop and to the boutique. There was somebody called Garga Muni there. He's still around, he's in Vrindavan, he's sometimes known as Garga Muni. So I asked him to take my donation. "Sure, sure, come on." Then he sold me a set of Bhagavatams. So that time a set was three books, first canto. And I paid, I think, $13. I don't know if it was a good price or... But still got one of them. Two got nip from me, but... I said, "I gotta go now. There's some people in the back you can talk to. Thanks a lot." Locked the door and left somewhere. So I wasn't getting too much information. My first visit, I was trying to find out about this. I went to the back and then somebody came up to me. And he said, "We're doing a special project here to save the whole world and need a little help. You know how to hold a nail?" "Yeah, I know how to hold a nail." My uncle had a little workshop, wooden workshop in his garage and so, basement. Then I held the nail and he started hammering it in. You know about the holding nail, there's a... it's a very technical thing. As soon as it goes in the wood, you have to move your hand, otherwise you get your finger smashed. Maybe not high tech, but there's some technique there. Then he said, "Wow, you did so great! You're an expert nail holder!" He shook my hand and said, "I'm Jayananda. What's your name?" At that time my name was Jay. Bhakti, so I was not Bhakti yet, just Visitor Jay. And he said, "You know how to hammer too?" And said, "Yeah, I know, but I had a hammer." So he said, "Okay, hold the nail and hammer it in." He drew some circles on the wood, and I was hammering in, and again he hit me in the back and hugged me and said, "You're great, you're so super." Showed me a picture of the Rath Yatra in Jagannath Puri. "So we're going to do a festival like this." You know, amazing that is. A million people or something, 10 lakhs. And we're going to build this car here. This is going to be a car like that. Wow. How long is that going to take? That's going to take a couple of months or maybe a year to build. No, 1 week. ISKCON projects, you know, very... Then, so they said, "No, we're going to do it in a week and see everyone that pulls the rat, everyone that sees this chariot, these adidis here, these are special, we have in the temple, the Jagannath, they all get liberated, they go back to the Godhead and we need your help." So it sounds like a good project, liberate the world. So there I was building the rath with the crew of maybe 8-9 devotees and hammering the wood and sawing and everything. So while we were cutting, then Jayananda would tell us so many pastime about Prabhupada, how great Srila Prabhupada was and how merciful. And I said, "This sounds like a real guru." And I thought, "I'd like to go eventually to see him, meet him." He said, "Where is he?" And he said, "Well, he's in Canada, in Montreal. Lost his visa for America. He's there waiting to get a new visa. He's going to go to India, though, maybe." I thought, maybe this is my... So then anyway, I was working with the Rath Yatra. Then one devotee kind of took me over and showed me how to chant japa. I read the book Easy Journey to Other Planets about antimatter and everything that kind of fit my scientific side. And then, so this devotee gave me a bead, said, "Why don't you go out today in the park and just chant?" And since I've been doing yoga and everything, I sat in the park and went into yoga asana and started chanting. And I chanted about 32 rounds on first day. And I thought, this is the most intense, wonderful meditation I've ever done. I was feeling so much, I don't know what I was feeling, it was like something really super, transcendental. And I went back to the temple and that devotee was waiting for me. He said, "Excuse me, you still have those beads?" I said, "Sure. By accident I gave you Prabhupada's chanting beads. I'm not supposed to give those to anybody. I need them back." The next day it wasn't quite the same. You know. So then I was, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there and Vishnu Jan, they're all chanting and dancing during the kirtan. So it was very intense, maybe a week, 10 days, I don't know exactly. Then I decided, if you don't really dive into something, I mean, if you don't really try it, how will you ever know if it's right or not? Let me try it out. I'm on vacation, I got time before my classes start. Let me try it, give it a intensive program, and then if it works, okay, then I found it, and if it doesn't work, well, at least I go on and keep looking till I find the right thing. So I decided that on Rath Yatra day that I'd shave up and become a brahmachari. 10 days program, you know. I think it takes more time here in Chaupati. Hey, that was the beginning of ISKCON, we're a little liberal. Somehow they accepted me, I don't know how. So Jayananda Prabhu shaved me up, left a big sika, still got one. And on the Rath Yatra today, some of them were surprised. They said, "Oh, there's Bhakti Jay, he's there shaved up, pulling the rat." So there was a... Then I told the president that I wanted to go to see Prabhupada after the Rath Yatra. Then... He said, "You won't understand him, he has an Indian accent. Very hard for Americans to understand him, so you better stay here and do some service in the temple." But then some other devotee said, don't listen to him. He just wants to get you to do some service. But you offer him a ticket to go see Prabhupada also, and then see what he says. So I tried it, and he said, really? Give me a ticket to go? Okay, then. Then he became exposed. And so then I went to Montreal, and there weren't so many devotees at that time, maybe only three temples. There was San Francisco, New York, and Montreal. And so maybe the whole ISKCON had 150, 200 devotees. I don't know exactly. I mean, at least in the temple, maximum. So a new brahmachari shaved up after class. Prabhupada said, who's that? And then Gagamani happened to be there, Maramuni, excuse me. And he knows this Bhakta Jay from San Francisco. And Prabhupada said, bring him over for lunch tomorrow. I didn't know what I was getting into. The Gagamuni was there with Brahmananda, his big brother, and there. At that time I was very skinny and young. I was 19 years old, second year college. And then, so they fed so much prasad. I couldn't eat so much. I didn't have the capacity. But the other two could eat a lot. They were... When you get to be a devotee for a while, your appetite increases a little bit. I remember there was rice, I think it was curry sauce and pakoras, but I didn't really know the names of things yet, but from the picture memory I have, that was the preps and some other subjis and things. So they were, the Prabhupada kept saying, give me more, and I was like ready to bust. Then I had an audience with Prabhupada, darshan, told him my idea, maybe go to India. He said, yes, don't worry, you stay with me, I'll train you up. And I'll send you to India after a couple of years. That's exactly what happened. I was with Prabhupada, and he was very kind to me, gave me some, I was the assistant to his servant, kind of an assistant to the assistant of his servant, secretary, and I could do some personal service. When they went out shopping after lunch, he would take rest. And then I was guru sitting. We had a few devotees, so they had me sit outside his door. In case he rang his bell, I'd go in and answer. Many days he never rang. One day he rang the bell. I went inside, and he had a cockroach. Even in Canada they have cockroaches. And he said, you know, he said, help me, open the window. I opened the window and he told the cockroach, you're confined in this small little room. I'm going to give you now the whole world to enjoy. And threw him out the window. I found Prabhupada, everything he said was philosophical. At the same time, he had a sense of humor. In those days, then he wanted to dye his cloth, white cloth, to saffron. So he gave us, in those days we used the Gerwa Mati, this rock from the Himalayas somewhere. You grind it up and it becomes saffron, and then you dip your cloth in it and it becomes dyed. It's a very kacha, called kacha dye. And this, if you dye it with like this, that's called pakka dye, right? So this was kacha. But we were in a bathtub rubbing these stones for hours and hours. Prabhupada would come in and say, it's not thick enough. So we had to go on and on till we got the right consistency that it would dye the cloth. While this was going on, Prabhupada had gone downstairs in the basement for some reason. I don't know. Just maybe check it out or whatever. And the secretary, when he came up, said that a big rat had jumped in front of Prabhupada, and said, Hare Ram! It's like we were noticing every little thing he was doing, and how he immediately chanted, Hare Ram! immediate response, rat ran off. One day we were going by McGill University. Prabhupada was walking, and he's in the McGill University library. One of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book was there. I think Life and Teachings of Lord Chaitanya or something like that. He sent a book to McGill. Later Prabhupada wrote some article about there was one cardiologist in McGill who said that it seems there's something more than meets the eye, because he did many open heart surgeries, people die, and so like something leaves them. It's like some kind of sparkle in the eye, it's gone. He said something, when the blood goes through the heart, it gets energized. So he called it a ticker. So Prabhupada so wrote to him on all this, how there's a spirit soul in the heart and how all these things. It's in some of the books, this letter to the doctor from McGill. So I was there like that every day, walking with Prabhupada, with other devotees, and it was a very wonderful experience. Then some devotees stopped by to see, get the blessing of Prabhupada. They're going to go off to London to start the preaching there. It's Shyama Sundar and Guru Das and Mukunda and their wives. They were grihasthas, but Prabhupada was sending them to open up a whole country, a whole continent. They went off, and actually they met the Beatles, and they were able to make a recording on Apple Records, which we still play our Govinda and the Hare Krishna temple, the Radha Krishna temple, these two. So I met with them, and Prabhupada gave our blessings, and they went off later. So like this, this is how things started for me. That time, ISKCON was, I got ISKCON registered actually. It wasn't registered at first, so but one time we were doing book distribution, went into a college, university hostel. Different students were buying, and talked to them, and then went into one room, and the guy stood up and he took the book and he started shouting at me, swearing at me, saying this all nonsense. And so this is very offensive. Here I'm just a new, brand new devotee, so I just turned around and walked out. I was told if you hear offense, just leave the place. So I left. He was shocked because, you know, I didn't like react. I just turned around and walked off. Okay. Also thought if I commit to have too much commotion in the hostel, I may get kicked, thrown out. Won't be able to distribute any more books. But at that time, we didn't have many books. We only had like Back to Godhead. Once they published the Back to Godhead, had a skull in the desert with, I don't know exactly, I remember what the article was, why they used that as the cover page. I remember I was in McGill University holding up saying Back to Godhead, people look and see the skull. Make faces. Is that the Godhead? You know. So then that time we were trying to devise how to preach to the students. I think you got better techniques now, but at that time we put 3 to 4 devotees, and one had simply wonderful sweet balls. He go, say, open your mouth and put it in. Because if you gave it in the hand, they might throw it, you know. So it's in their mouth, at least they got a taste. The next one would go and give them a magazine. And the third one would go and have a big conch shell and say, you know, Sivu play. Contribution Sivu play. That's French for please give a donation. That's how we maintained the temple also, but we had a lot of friends. then it's kind of in the beginning, it was a big struggle, and that time we were renting a bowling alley. You know bowling? They have bowling. There's 10, there's white things, white, whatever they call them. And you throw a ball, and it rolls, and you got to knock all the 10 down. If you knock, however many you knock down, that's how many points you get. So there's this long wooden aisle with two gutters. So we had an 8-lane bowling alley as our temple. So we put wood in between the gutters with some linoleum over it. So you had this very nice hard wood, beautiful lane, and then you had some two white strips of linoleum on some ordinary wood. And then 5 lanes were used for the temple and 3 lanes for the ashram. We put a partition. Very simple. So the brahmacharis were all staying in the ashram side. That time Gopal Krishna Maharaj was bhakta with me. We were co-bhaktas. But he was working and as an executive, I think, in Pepsi Cola or some cosmetic company or something. He'd come every morning to the temple, we'd chant. That time we didn't have many books, so one of the books we had was Life and Story of Lord Chaitanya. There's a big chapter in Haridas Thakur. He was the Acharya of the Holy Name. So we didn't have older devotees. I mean, very few, maybe 1 month, 1 year older. Now you have so many counselors and older devotees to guide and help. We didn't have not much of a range there. So I'm reading this book, and it said that Haridas Thakur, when his mind would think of something else, he would chant louder. So being a 19-year-old student, my mind was thinking of so many things other than Hare Krishna. So I would keep on chanting louder and louder. Every time a new thought came in, louder. Another thought, louder. Probably you will never have your mind go off. But my mind would go off sometimes. So I'd go louder and louder. Finally, I'd be screaming loud as I could. The mind would stay pretty fixed. But then all the devotees went and complained to Prabhupada that this bhakta is shouting so loud, chanting so loud, we can't think, you know. But that was what I was doing. I wouldn't think of any of this Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada called me and asked why I'm chanting so loud and disturbing the devotees. I said, well, I read in his book, your mind goes off, chant louder, Haridas Thakur. So my mind goes off, so I was chanting louder. Then he thought, and Prabhupada was actually very liberal, like if he had a good reason, he'd listen. Then he told me, you could chant in the park then. So I was exiled to the park. So I wouldn't disturb the other devotees. Surely I'd be banned from this temple if I was chanting like that. So then, in the park, that time was the pre-jogger region, you know, time. There was no joggers, only squirrels, and I was just shouting in the park, walking, and feeling very blissful. So like that. This is just a few video clips, but. After 2 years, Prabhupada then went off. He got help. He got his visa, and he left. Before leaving, he gave me initiation. Called me Jaya Pitaka Das, Brahmachari. Then he made me the temple president of Montreal. And here I am, 2 weeks initiated temple president. So then I wrote to Prabhupada, maybe I'm too young, and he wrote back, he said, don't be body conscious.
Yeah.
You have to follow the order of the guru. So there I was. But I was, you know, there I was, Bhakti Jay, now I'm Jayapataka, but even though the other devotees weren't much older, but they, from their point of view, they are very much older. So if I told anyone, do this, do that, they'd look at me like, who are you, you know? So I had to learn techniques, how to convince people to do something without offending their false ego. And that time I was the president, I was the treasurer and the cook and the pujari. Because the previous president had taken all the devotees to open a new temple in Vancouver. And I had only 4 devotees in the temple and one 16-year-old student who came from his high school course in the afternoon and took prasad. So we didn't also have, we had $200 in the bank, about, now that would be 8,000 rupees, but so not too much. So then we went out to the wholesale fruit market and vegetable market, and there was a different Greek and different kinds of people selling the boxes of bananas and apples. And so we go and say we're monks, we're religious people, and we're giving out food, and we need some donations. So they give us a old box, like too old to sell wholesale. They give some banana. We fixed up, filled up a whole little pickup truck. So many kinds of fruits. So I didn't know how to cook many things, only halva and chutney and a few sabjis. So maybe 6-8 kinds of fruit chutneys. And maybe half a dozen, maybe also like 5-6 kinds of halva. Halva with apples, halva with peaches, halva with... But somehow we got 20 preparations. So the Indian students and some of the workers there, mainly from India, but we could get 200 people to come for the Sunday feast and give a $2 donation and get a 22 preparation feast. So in the morning I'd be cooking, and then the Prabhupada told us how to add a chaunch, where you put the ghee and the spices and then you lift up the dal and it would explode, and everyone attempts to. Then I'd have somebody make the plate up. I'd run and take a quick shower, because I was also the pujari. Then I'd take the plate and walk down the bowling alley lane to the Jagannath deity that was there. And after cooking, then, you know, get up, Mangalarti, chant some quick rounds, cook a whole feast, and then go and do the arti. I was so blissful. When I'm walking down with this plate, there's a humble offering, I hope you accept it. But I really felt very blissful. So in the beginning it was very, just had to start things in a very simple way. And then Prabhupada said he wanted to open many new temples. So then I thought, after I had built up the temple there to maybe 20-30 devotees, then that I'll take 3 devotees and go and open Toronto, which is a bigger city. And like that, then Prabhupada had Gargamuni phone me up and say he wants to send me to India, what he had said earlier. So by that, then he called me to see him in Los Angeles, went to see him, gave me a few tips. I really didn't know what would India be like. He said, what do I do if I see a sannyasi in India? He said, bow down. So, like that, when I got sent to India, I got a really cheap fare, $111 from Belgium to Bombay by Brothers Airlines. There were 3 brothers, Yusuf, Ali, and Ahmed. And they had bought a used Second World War plane. That's why it was so cheap. The plane had no decoration and no air pressure. Every time they went up, your ears would go, you get a headache and ears would buzz. And it would only fly a few hours, have to land, reload and go on. So I flew to first stopped in Rome, then Cairo, then Yemen, then Karachi, then Bombay. When I arrived, my head was... Then I thought I had a few contacts to Bombay. I called up. Nobody answered the phone. Sometimes the phone didn't work, cross line, different things. It was in 1970. So then somebody came up, the eye was like hanging out and some like diseased beggar. It was the open terminal that time. And said, you know, bakshish, I don't know what they're talking about. So I thought, this is a very strange place. So let me go to Calcutta where Achyutananda was waiting. So someone sold me a ticket for $15 to Calcutta. Things, and that time it was 7.5 rupees per dollar. And gasoline was 60 paisa for petrol. So then I got to Calcutta and asked a taxi to take me to this temple where Chitananda was staying. And I got there and he charged me 6 rupees. And they said, oh, you're paying 3 times the amount. He went, oh, it must have taken you on a real ride to get the meter that high. So like that, and here I was in India. And then Prabhupada came to India. So like that. Then I learned the Bengali script because I was in Calcutta. Most difficult thing was reading, you have, when they write English in the Indian script, I would say, glass house, glass house, oh. You know how they write it? Not all the signs are in English, but gradually I learned Bengali from going out and shopping in the morning. And Prabhupada came. Achyutananda was here for a few years, so he knew the ropes. I was just totally new. And Prabhupada wanted to establish a mission in India. So here it was registered in Bombay in 1971. And we had branches in Calcutta, Mayapur, Delhi. I was really glad that I met Prabhupada in America, in Canada, wherever in the West. I think I would have come to India looking for a guru. Who knows what I would have found, you know. Very hard to find a bona fide person. So you're very fortunate. You have a very systematic. Now, one time Prabhupada, someone said to Prabhupada, what about those good old days? And Prabhupada said, what good old days? These are the good old days. Those are really rough days. Then I got sent to Mayapur. We didn't have a car, we had a bicycle. I remember I went to buy some wood and nails and things, whatever, it's hardware. So I rode 45 minutes from Mayapur by the bicycle. And I got on, and I was really happy because the whole way I was chanting Hare Krishna and although my father and grandfather were millionaires, but I was very happy being a simple brahmachari. And by that time, maybe I was a sannyasi, because Prabhupada gave me sannyasi in Calcutta. But then I drove by bicycle, I was chanting all the way. I was very happy, came in with a smile, got off, and this big hardware, you know, set. He looked at me. He said, why are you happy? You have nothing. Bicycle. I am a hardware store. I got a 3-story house. I have wife, money, a big position here in the market. I'm not happy. Why are you happy? Unfortunately, people don't, you know, how big a house you have, how big a car you have, doesn't make you happy. But if you're Krishna conscious, you're happy. If you have an understanding of what is the real meaning of life, the sense gratification may make you happy, sometimes may make you sad. You smash up your new car, you're sad. I was happy because of getting Prabhupada's mercy, having some devotional service. You'll all be happy if you do devotional service. Any questions? We were living in a grass hut actually in Mayapur. We had a grass hut, still there, same hut. And Prabhupada came out to visit us. And he said, actually, this grass hut is all you need to be Krishna conscious. By the side of the Ganges, grass hut, chanting rounds. This is sattvic, mode of goodness. But if we only have this facility, who will come here? Now people, modern people, they want things more in a mode of passion. That's why we're building this guest house with stone chips and iron and cement and bricks and steel and so on. That's in the mode of passion. Whether we can get people to come and be comfortable here. So Prabhupada is giving us a vision to build a spiritual city. There'll be 50,000 people. We're living in a grass hut, five of us, whatever. I was talking about a city, but already Mayapur is developing. We have over 1,000 some devotees. Still far away from a city, but at least something developing. We're getting a lot of input and help, guidance from Radhanath Swami, one of Mayapur's co-GBCs. That's why we're meeting here. How I took sannyas. Everything happened very fast with me. I was sent to India and we were there for a few months and we were waiting for Prabhupada said he would come. And then we heard that Prabhupada gave 9 people sannyas in Los Angeles. So we wanted what's like to take sannyas, and we should take sannyas. Didn't really have so much of an idea what sannyas was. But it, for a young brahmachari, sounded very inspiring. Then Prabhupada came, and we were staying in a temporary place that was given to us for 6 months. It was going to be a clinic, medical clinic, but it was just empty at this point. So the owner said we can just stay there. No lease, no rent, because in Calcutta any lease, then you can't get him out. You just stay there as our guest. So we were there. Then Prabhupada was... there were some issues in ISKCON at that time. I won't go into all those details. But he talked to Achyutananda first, who was my elder, and then by... We thought maybe giving him sannyas. We didn't really have an idea what was the procedure. But then, he didn't get sannyas then. He called me and talked to me. I didn't get it either. Just wanted to find out a few things. But then later Prabhupada called us in and said that I gave 9 people sannyas and there's actually 11 on my list and you two are the other two. So then he asked Chaitananda if he wanted to take sannyas, so he said yes. Then he asked me. had already decided to remain a brahmachari, so, okay. Of course, I was very fortunate. I was in India. I was in a village in Mayapur. That time, of course, I took him in Calcutta. So he gave us on Radhastami. Then he gave the danda first to Achyutananda, said, "You are Achyutananda Swami. I'm giving you first, that means you're the senior sannyasi." He smiled at me. So I was put in my place. You know. And then he gave me the danda and said, "You're Jaya Pataka Swami." At that time I was 21. Now it's much harder to get sannyasa. You have to be older, or you have to be on a long waiting list and go through kinds of training. Somehow Prabhupada was in a very fast mode. Then from Calcutta I was there for a while as president, and I was sent to Mayapur in the grass hut. We only had a very narrow, small budget, 35 rupees a week. So I asked permission if we could grow our own food. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, some of money, or I don't know, there are many things I suggested he didn't agree with, but we were used to that. He said, "What, they're Westerners, how they can grow the things?" And I said, "Give us a chance, we can try." And we have, 5 acres. So then Prabhupada said, "Okay." So then we were growing like bindi and tomato, all kinds of things. I got this Indian Council of Agricultural Research, they have a magazine from Delhi. And so I was like a science student, chemistry, so said, okay, NPH, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and cow dung has this much, and chicken droppings are this much. And so we figure out how to do that thing. It's more, for me, it was like a science lab with the local workers. But they were, if we didn't work too, they were not very active. And one little plot, maybe a little bigger than this room, of tomatoes, I got 5 tons. You'd be surprised how much Mother Earth gives. And then somebody gave me a seed for the wing beans from Australia. And there's so many wing beans. But nobody in India, nobody knew how to cook it or anything. It was like, so then... And the devotees, after when you grow your own, you get so much, you get like quintals and quintals. And so that's what we would eat every day. So we grew radishes, and we got so many, like a couple tons of radish. And the devotees, "Please, no more radish." Every day, radish, radish, radish. That's the downside, unless you're growing many things, so. But it was very inspiring to be in Mayapur, and Prabhupada gave us the assignment to build the first building there, the Lotus building. Remember when I was a student, I was thinking that I'd like to be able to work and do something. It was a challenge. It was inspiring, but everybody is looking around because they say, "What I'll take up?" But all the professors and nobody looked inspired by what they were doing. It's like, and but then Krishna Kanta was so much. Every day was such a challenge to do different things. Whether it was in the farm in Mayapur, whether it was preaching in the city. It was so much of a challenge that and so much inspiring. I remember once I was when I was in Canada, a television show asked us. They said, "We'll pay you $45 each. We want you to act as an actor on a television show. You have to act. Your role is to be a Hare Krishna." That sounded pretty easy. I mean, that's what I was. So, and there was this kind of daytime show. They called it the People's Court or something like that. Here we have our Lok Adalat, but this was more just simple issues. So they had a real actor who was acting as my father, and I, who was supposed to acting as his son, but who was a devotee. So he wanted to take away my bicycle or motorcycle because he said that he's going to use it in the church. And I gave it to him, use it for himself. So I want it back. This was the basic issue. And there was a doctor, a lawyer, a psychologist, like three, four senior, like established citizens. Maybe they're all actors, but they said that they were really in that. And they had to like mediate between us, judge. So then they knew that I was really a devotee. Everyone else was actors. And so the father made his case, and I made my case. He gave it to me to use it. Now I'm doing this. This is what I'm doing for the welfare of people. If I want to use my motorcycle for this purpose, why should you take it back? He gave it to me. I can use it for whatever that I like to do, and some simple things, and try to fit in as much preaching as I could. Then they said, okay, break. Soap, you know, the soap advertisement. They have the commercials. And the three of them were there, and they're looking at me, say, you know, he really believes in what he's doing. And one of the other panel of judges said, wouldn't that be amazing to actually believe in what you do? And the third one said, it's inconceivable. I can't conceive of actually believing in what you do. Yeah, I'm still, you know, I'm 20-year-old, whatever, and here they are, you know, all these big doctors, and nobody believes in what they're doing. It's kind of an eye-opener. You think, okay, all these people are doing, but they're doing it because they're getting paid to do it, most of them, and maybe a few of them really like doing what they're doing, but most of them, they don't even believe in what they're doing, what they speak of liking it. I've had these few experiences. So if you have Krishna consciousness, the base, even whether you're working or whether, I'm sure you'll find life a lot more exciting and satisfying. Otherwise, life is pretty dry. Sukha dukkha da, you get dunked up and down. Happiness, suffering, happiness, suffering. One thing I'm very concerned about, one of the biggest causes of death of 18-year-old to 25-year-olds in India is suicide. Because they don't know what the purpose of life is. Their girlfriend drops them, or they fail their exam, and the parents are really angry with them. So somehow life for them has no more meaning, and they commit suicide. A valuable life could do so much. They could go back to Godhead. They could help people do so many things. Sometimes I was thinking somehow, because in some countries they have these hotlines for suicide, what we can do or how we can also, like when you're in Krishna consciousness, we know we don't die. So if you commit suicide, you just lose your gross body and you're there in that astral body. You're there as a ghost. And then, you know, flying around and looking at your friends or something. I don't know what, you know, ghosts do, but try to haunt somebody, take over their body when they're... It's not a positive alternative. But so many are doing... Even I read in Australia, 11,000 students a year commit suicide. I don't have the number for India, but I'm sure it's much more because of our population. So many people are frustrated. They don't know the purpose of life. Even just by, they know a little bit about Krishna, like in the in the Bhagavad Gita it says, Svapamapyasya dharmasya mahato trayato bhoyat. You know, a little bit, they do a little bit of Krishna. If you just offer one Dharmada lamp, you'll be saved from so many troubles in your life. There's actually one of the Mahatmyas of Dharmada, whoever offers a lamp to Dharmada, he's saved from troubles. For as long as Indra is in his post. It's a long time. So, yes, sir. Can I speak about? Do they want to hear about that? Somebody attacked me in 1989. He wants to hear about that. I was visiting a temple in Madrid. And actually outside of Madrid there's a farm called Barcelona in the district of Guadalajara in Spain. And they had a big festival and there were many sannyasis and many devotees and beautiful deities. So one guy kept asking me if I wanted a ride to Barcelona. I said, no, I already have my plane ticket. Apparently he was asking many people, and then sannyasis. And he was apparently crazy. And he had as his idea that he wanted to kill a Hindu guru, Hare Krishna guru, Sanatana Dharma, whatever his concept was. Because whatever reason he had in his mind. So he wanted to drive somebody on the way, murder them and throw them off the road. So, of course, we don't know that. He just heard this guy smiling and can drive you. There's no need. So I was in the airport checking in at the counter. And I look and the lady in front of me, she makes like a horrible, like a frightening face. So this guy ran behind me and took a knife and slit my throat. Then he ran off. And so I was, you know, you get your throat cut. I was exceedingly bleeding and I thought that I took off my chadar and wrapped it around my neck and sat down. Didn't know where to go, what to do. So I just sat down and my whole life like went before me. I thought I'm going to die now. Started making my prayers to Krishna. And then the medical people came and took me to a first aid room, bandaged up my neck, took me off my ambulance. Now whenever I see an ambulance, I feel different. Because when you're in the ambulance and the sirens are going, people don't move. It's not like everybody just pulls over, let the ambulance by, you know. It takes a while. So I'm sitting there bleeding and going in this ambulance, people move aside eventually and going on. Then I got to the hospital. I couldn't talk because my neck was cut. They asked me what my blood type was. You know your blood type? I didn't know it. It's good to know your blood type. It saves about 10 minutes for them to, which may be life and death. Later I found out my blood type is to be positive. So I try to live my blood type. Then they told me to lie down. I was sitting up all this time. And I lay down and literally I was like drowning in my own bleeding. And I passed out. They had given me some anesthesia. 3 days later, after an intensive care, I woke up and I was still here by Krishna's mercy. So the doctor said that it missed my carotid artery by 1 millimeter. And if you cut the carotid artery, even in the hospital, they can't stop the bleeding. cut the jugular vein. Then I was there in the hospital listening to Prabhupada tapes, and I said I had a vegetarian diet. So they, at that time I was had a stracheotomy, this like hole they put in your throat, and they were feeding me through the nose into the stomach by tubes and injection of big. But then they injected this into the tube, and a chicken bone got stuck in the tube. So I said, these people are cheating me. I told them I'm vegetarian, and they're getting, and I get all this. I can't taste anything, it's going right by, but I can, I'm getting gas, like non-veg gas. So then we had some devotees who came to help me, and they took a hotel room near the hotel, and they were cooking there, and they smuggled, they said no outside food, but they smuggled it into the hospital. And then they'd serve me whatever they're going to feed me, then the person go out. Then the devotee come quick, take the pot, wash it off in the toilet, transfer and put my food in it, and close it. Sometimes they had to do it in two parts. One time they put in spinach, but actually the hospital also served me spinach. So the guy looked, two spinach. I thought we got caught now. Then Dhammakrishna Maharaj and Shivaram Maharaj came to see me, brought Gornitai deities in the hotel, in a hospital, and I had a darshan and could worship them. Then I didn't have a Brahmin thread because my poita, my Upanayan thread had been cut or taken off by whatever. I didn't have it. So then I asked Tama Krishna to chant on one, give me, so I'd have a installed. See, when you get a second initiation, the guru chants on your thread, touching it to his thread, so that's a connection from all the gurus before. But I had no thread, so I need a new one. But I wanted a connected one. So he chanted and gave me. Like this it was, then devotees would come to see me, and I couldn't talk. I had to write because my throat was... So I was in there 12 days. You can imagine with all this, I wanted to get out. And so they said that normally somebody like with that serious an injury would be there for a few months, but they let me out. They wanted to get rid of me. So in 12 days I was... Later they found, they arrested the person, but they found that he was mentally unstable and put him in a mental hospital. And then he was there for a few years, and he's been let out. Someone told me that he committed suicide. I don't know. When I go there, they have extra security for me. But when something like that happens, you really think what you want to do with your whatever. Krishna gave me back some life, so I really want to do something for Krishna while I was here on the planet. Then he revealed that he was trying for a long time to kill a religious leader, but then he failed, so that was the last chance for him. So you gotta be careful. And later they found out he was really acting crazy in a temple. During Janmashtami, he came in with six knives, razor sharp, put them in a tulsi plant and offered knife arti to the deities. So like they'd be a little selective about who you let in the temples. And after someone offers a knives to the deity, they might have thought that maybe he's not normal. As a local authority, were you thinking a little bit strange? I don't know what they were thinking. Yes? Okay, it's late now. Last question. What's the need of ISKCON today and tomorrow? Today and tomorrow. You see, the people, this is not a today and tomorrow issue because even 5,000 years ago when Krishna spoke to Bhagavad Gita, they had birth, death, old age and disease. People are still suffering the same problems and they need some spiritual guidance. They need some spiritual direction. They need to be saved from these four basic problems of life. It's not like now we're in the 21st century. We don't get old anymore. We don't get sick anymore. We don't die anymore. We don't get reborn anymore. That's happening today. That's going to happen tomorrow. And of course, I remember I was just watching when I flew here one documentary, some news thing, and one doctor said, well, now we have the financial crash, people losing their homes, but they can't pay their mortgage and so on, but even tomorrow there'll still be some homes around. But we also have the environmental problems that we're destroying the environment. But if you don't solve that, there's no turning back. So they say that, I read also somewhere recently that the biggest cause of environmental pollution is slaughterhouses. Very simple thing, even that we're vegetarian, that we promote a more simple spiritual way of life. It's very hard to maintain a sattvic life if you're not spiritually oriented. But even if we could reduce the slaughterhouses, that would be a big aid for the environment. So there are many, whether you want materially, spiritually, different kinds of aspects that ISKCON is helping with. Ultimately, the Prabhupada said eventually there will be a financial crash and it would be good to have self-sufficient farms and communities to show people that how they could survive. When there was a problem of the in the Cold War, there was one devotee offering special tours to India on survival for $5,000 a trip for each person. So he asked me, he wants to bring them to Mayapur and they need a demonstration how to pass stool in the field. Because they're only used to toilet, so they don't know how to pass through, but in India you can get some guidance. And and how to plow the fields with bulls and things. Because what if there's no more mobile or petrol or anything? How they eat, they don't know. They're like they stand if the grocery store doesn't open, if you can't buy everything in a plastic bag and they'll just stand and die. They're so maybe you know they're so far away from survival that if there really is a collapse of the economy, maybe even here in Bombay there'd be many people at least who don't know how to survive also. But in America it's a real problem. If they don't go to the grocery store, they don't know anything. I mean, they don't even know, like, some people just eat from this TV dinners. It's like pre-cooked and frozen. To actually just get raw rice or wheat and make it into food, that's like too high-tech for them. Or too low-tech or whatever. They don't know how to do. So Prabhupada, I mean, that's just an example how critical, I mean, people wouldn't pay so much money. We had to take them out in the bushes and show them how to pass stool for $5,000. That's 2 lakhs of rupees. It's a true story. So that in those days when dollars are worth more. So that, but I hear also you have, like in Karnataka, Belgaum has a farm, and here you have a farm also. Maybe India and Asian places won't be so much hit, but be a big shock if people cannot, the normal routine that they're used to. Any break in that, they really don't know how to survive. So probably we should also be prepared to shelter people. But we haven't really succeeded in having so many self-sufficient farms, but that was, just maybe for reference, Prabhupada had all these ideas that we don't know. We can't 100% depend on the material infrastructure that's going now. Not that we're paranoid, not that we're here, we're using it in Krishna's service. But there's so many ways that ISKCON can help the people to know what is the main thing. If you don't know who you are, what's the purpose of life, what is the direction you should take, and the whole world is a really chaotic, crazy place. But if you know how you fit in, how everything fits in, you can be much more peaceful. Even for simple things, like getting rid of stress. Do youth also have stress nowadays? A psychologist and a psychiatrist in the West did a study and said meditation is the best way to release stress, and the best meditation is mantra meditation. And that's what we're teaching, is how to do mantra meditation. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Of course, the most important thing is your love for Godhead, your love for Krishna, the highest happiness, the highest perfection. And ISKCON is teaching Lord Chaitanya's message, how to develop love for Krishna. I think that's useful today. It will still be useful tomorrow. Anybody here wants love for Krishna? So this is the fast track. We learn how to do things in a way that's pleasing to Krishna. So thank you all very much. I have some Nrsingha oil from the Nrsingha Abhishek and Chaturdasi, Nrsingha Chaturdasi. Anybody would like some? Which, I have two flavors. The first Abhishek with 8 different oils, which are called Ashta Osudi. They're special Ayurvedic oils like Chandan and musk and kasturi and aguru and those type of. Then there's, I got, after that, since we had another 12, 13 varieties of floral oils, oil of the lotus, essential oil, lotus, rose, jasmine, mogra, lavender, like that. So we call this Puspa Ganda. So which one do you want today? Ashta. Who says Ashta? Who says Pushpa? Who won? Ashta one. So then tomorrow morning I'm supposed to give Bhagavatam class. If I have time, I'll give it out there. Done. Put it on your forehead. Like this. Smell it. Okay. Take and go. Pet. Don't move your hands.